The Monty Show. What is up? We are back. It is Wednesday, the 10th of October. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
Let's see. Why were we off for a few days? Well, mainly because we saw the Foo Fighters on Monday, and then I had a migraine yesterday, so we didn't do the show. Today, we're back. And we're back. We're back, and we're better than ever. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. We have got BYU football coming up. Dan Wolkin of the USA Today set Cougar Nation on fire. Yes, some people were not amused with what Dan wrote. We'll talk about that. Zach Wilson should be your starting quarterback. Jimmy Butler put out a hit. Wait until we tell you what Jimmy Butler did today. And I don't mean yelling at people at practice, but what he did. We got definitive proof that players were paid at Arizona. Lonzo's back on the court. And can you believe that he benches more than you, Lonzo Ball?
Yes, it's amazing. It's a freak of nature thing.
It is. We'll talk about all of that. Lakers, LeBron, Lonzo going at it tonight. Looking forward to that. Follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show is where you follow me on Twitter. Young Jake.
Yeah.
Let's start with a little BYU. Because Monday and Tuesday was just chock full of Dan Wolkin from the USA Today writing a piece. And he writes a weekly thing, I think it is, on the Misery Index, where he wrote that BYU, coming out of their embarrassment against Utah State, sorry, Kalani, it's embarrassing, where you got shellacked at home, that, BYU needs to join a conference because they play this tough schedule, they get beat up, and then they have nothing to play for the rest of the year. Well, on its face, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Join a conference. But he didn't say, like, join the Big 12. Dan Wolkin suggested that BYU go back to the Mountain West or join the AAC. And I got to tell you, I'm tired of this conversation. And in fact, I'm sick and tired of this conversation because I respect Dan Wolkin a lot. Him and I have disagreed on several things over the years, but I respect Dan. I would doubt he'd say the same about me because he doesn't really know me, but I like Dan's work. I think he's probably jealous I'm better looking than him, but that's fine too.
Okay.
Hello. My point is, this lacks a little depth out of Dan Wolkin. Because when you say BYU should join the AAC so that they have something to play for, if they join the AAC, do they have more to play for than they would have now if they stayed independent?
No.
No, the answer is no. And I only have to point to last year when UCF went undefeated, didn't get into the college football playoff, hung a fake championship banner, bought fake championship rings, and had a fake championship parade.
Huh.
Like, it's stuff like that that drives me nuts. Oh, by the way, they lost their coach and the entire coaching staff because he went to Nebraska.
Yeah.
So you gained nothing. The net gain of go undefeated, join a conference, go undefeated, you got nothing. Oh, well, that's just because it was UCF, Monty. Well, what about TCU? 2010, Mountain West. They go undefeated, 13-0. No, they did not get into the BCS. They did not win a national championship. What about Oklahoma State, the Big 12? Here
yep,
we go.
Yep.
2011, they're 12-1, right? They played the BCS. Oh, no, they didn't. You don't need to join a conference if you're BYU so that you, quote, have something to play for. Because the argument that you have nothing to play for and the argument that you have no access to the national championship isn't fixed. It doesn't go away when you join the Mountain West or the AAC.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't go anywhere. I think you have more access to the national championship now than you would in any conference. You're not going to the SEC, let's be honest. That's not even an option. That's not a question.
If you were going to a Power 5 conference, this would be a significantly different conversation.
But I wouldn't even if they had the option to go to the Pac-12, I wouldn't even love that over what they have now, because I feel like what they have now is the ability to build a schedule that nationally is respected. You're playing big-time programs. Like, you have good talent on the schedule. So let's say they win 13-0 or whatever, you know, like let's say they went undefeated.
Yes.
There's a real conversation around, well, they beat, you know, several great programs. They beat Wisconsin. Oh, you beat Washington? They beat Washington? Well, they beat Washington. Like, that's a good win.
Have a parade.
Have a parade. Like, you know what I mean? So I just think at the end of the day, they're in a good place right now. The problem isn't that they're an independent. The problem is that they're not winning at a rate they need to win to be relevant nationally.
And truth be told, the problem is that Porter Gustin is the captain at USC, not at BYU. That Damian Mama went to USC, he didn't go to BYU. And there's a list of recruits.
Well, nobody talks about that. Nobody's going to talk about what you didn't have. They're only going to talk about what you do have.
And what you do have now is you don't have enough athletic ability. You do not, frankly, have enough speed to compete with a Washington.
Yeah.
You do not have enough ability to get to the spot against Utah State, which is very telling. And I'm not saying that the Aggies need to roll out Aggie tears or be all pissed at me like you always are in Logan. My point is, Utah State's a team that BYU should beat regularly. Instead, it's the script has been flipped.
Yep.
That's a problem. You have to be the best team in the state of Utah, and you haven't been for a decade. It doesn't start with beating the Utes. It starts with beating the Aggies on a regular basis.
Yep.
You can't say that because you're not talented enough. And everybody's been talking about how, you know, Tuiaki needs to be demoted and not calling the defense anymore. And my argument to that, same thing I said yesterday, it's not a coaching issue. It's a talent issue. And you're getting beat so badly, especially in the run, is what's really disappointing. And Sione Takitaki talked about this week, that they're just not tackling well enough. Well, you're not tackling well enough because you're not fast enough to get to a spot. So, like, let's say you're running into the flat against a top athlete, whether that's Washington or Arizona, whoever you want to point to. If you're not fast enough to win the angle, you better be elite athletically to make the tackle. You're not fast and you're not elite athletically.
So you're not making the tackle.
Exactly right. So the issue is not coaching. The issue is recruiting and talent.
Yeah, and I thought that your point there was exemplified in the Washington game. Like, I was tremendously disappointed by that performance, but you start looking back at it when we're having this kind of a conversation, and you start to realize that, yeah, they're at a significant disadvantage athletically, and it comes out on the field. And I think, much like the article, it's easy to go on the surface level of this and say, well, this is a coaching issue. They're running the wrong scheme defensively, or, you know, Tanner Mangum's not executing at a high enough level. And that's just not what it is. Yeah. It's deeper than that. And I think at a certain point, you can't blame the player who's giving it everything he has, and it's just simply not good enough, because the guy on the other side of the line is just more athletic. He has more ability. He's been coached at a higher level in some cases. It just is that simple. So I don't know. At the end of the day, our conversation here is whether they should join a conference. That's not what you should be talking about right now.
No, it's not.
It's just really not. At the end of the day, you need to be talking about finding better talent. And you're exactly right. They need to dominate the state of Utah. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen while you've got Kyle Whittingham coaching, but at the end of it, you need to win every game you can.
You beat Arizona. You should have beat Cal, let's be honest. You beat Wisconsin on the road. You beat McNeese. Now you've lost two in a row. You got your teeth kicked in at Washington and by Utah State at home. And now Saturday, you've got a team in Hawaii coming into Lavelle Edwards Stadium, and you need to win that game. It's a really critical game, and you mentioned Tanner Mangum. I think it's time for Zach Wilson. And, you know, just conversing with some BYU folks that I know, and it sounds like Zach Wilson's going to get the start. And I thought it was great. Jay Drew wrote a piece this week where he talked to Kalani about who's going to make the decision, and Kalani essentially said that it's a team effort, but I'm going to make the decision at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And that's why I said it's not a Kalani problem. It's not a Tuiaki problem. You changed your offensive coordinator, and that's worked out great with Grimes. It's a talent problem. So you have this kid who comes in against Utah State and Zach Wilson and instantly becomes your leading rusher in one play. And you score a really nice touchdown after a really nice drive. And he didn't do it against second and third teamers. He did it against first and second teamers. So you look at Zach Wilson. Now it's 3 of 4 for 52 yards.
Yeah.
Right? But it's a 13-yard average.
Yeah.
That's twice as much as Tanner Mangum. It's a touchdown. It's a 95% or a 95.9 QBR. It's two rushes for 25 yards. to be the leading rusher on the team. What does that tell you? He gave them energy. He gave them enthusiasm.
I mean, this is the classic case of you brought the guy off the bench that everybody's been wanting to see, and all of a sudden the team is re-energized. We saw this with Baker Mayfield and the Browns. I mean, Baker comes on the field and lights it up. That's the same effect that Wilson's had.
It's the exact same thing.
It's the same thing. And the question to me at the end of this is, at what point will he make the mistake, the young guy mistake? Because that's going to happen. And when that does happen, you cannot rip this guy. You can't say, well, get Tanner back in the game. That can't happen because Tanner's not your future. This kid is.
Yeah, and you've got athletes on offense. I think Gunnar Romney's been one of the better stories this year we've seen as he's gotten more, more opportunities. I actually liked some of the things I saw against Utah State from him. Dylan Colley's a guy I want to see get a lot more opportunity. But you've got guys who can play. You certainly have the running game. Now, it would be nice. I don't know what's going on with Pini Katoa. He looks like he's lost a little confidence to me. I'd love to see him pick his game back up. And obviously, Squally's got to get going again. He has been a catalyst. But here nor there, not to drone on about BYU, my point is Zach Wilson should be starting. And with all due respect to Dan Wolken, they don't need to join a conference. If it's a P5 and it's the Pac-12 or the Big 12 or the Big 10, whoever, okay, that conversation needs to happen. Not a G5. Sorry. The AAC, with all due respect, the AAC is not an option. The Mountain West is not an option. You're in a better position there. Make sure you find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show, where we have a poll question on Twitter. The proverbial poll question. I might do one poll a week, by the way, which is poll question. And right now, the question is, who would you start versus Hawaii, Mangum or Wilson? And it's probably, this was probably slanted to Wilson the minute I wrote the tweet, but it's a landslide. It's 88%, about 100 votes, 88% for Zach Wilson.
I guess change is in the air.
Well, I think certainly it energizes the fan base. I think there's definitely that. Make sure you find me on Twitter again, The Monty Show and TheMontyShow.com. Let's talk a little Arizona Wildcat basketball real quick, briefly, because I feel like I've kind of beaten this story into the ground. But when it turns out that you're freaking brilliant and you can say, I told you so, I like saying, I told you so. Hey, I told you so. A consultant, who was paid by Arizona, or excuse me, paid by Adidas, easy, who was paid by Adidas,
mm-hmm,
clearly to recruit talent, did exactly that. And this is an ugly story. And on the stand today, under oath, it was testified to that, among others, DeAndre Ayton was paid money by Adidas. And you'll remember that there were rumors that Ayton was paid $100,000 to go to Arizona. Those were rumors. Well, those are not, I'm not going to say that those are facts now, but TJ Gasnola, who is a consultant for Adidas, said under oath he gave money to the families of DeAndre Ayton, Dennis Smith Jr., Silvio D'Souza, Billy Preston, and Brian Bowen. Now, as it turns out, Brian Bowen's family got paid by every school in the country, I think, which is why he's no longer playing NCAA basketball. He's actually playing professional basketball in Australia. But it looks like Adidas had paper all over the place. They were spreading money around. But here's my question directly about Arizona, because sweaty Sean Miller, the king of dress shirt destroyers, has denied this. He served that one game suspension, whatever you want to say, suspension, not suspension.
He had the epic press conference.
Yeah, where, he did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Yeah.
Or no, that was Bill Clinton, my bad. Anyway, the point is,
same thing.
Yeah, same thing. The point is, you can no longer deny anymore that there was impropriety involving the Arizona basketball program.
No, and you and I never denied it. I mean, at that time, we were both here and we were both covering it, it was plain as day. I mean, it's obvious that that's what happened. And I just feel like at this point, you're right, this isn't a fact. This isn't, in concrete factual based evidence, But this guy's saying, hey, here's what happened. And by the way, he might be a little knowledgeable on the situation. So I'm going to go ahead and say that that did happen. And Adidas does not care about the fact that they're outed as paying players. Because what's going to happen?
Nothing.
Nothing.
And you have to remember the facts around the Arizona story. Book Richardson, who was Sean Miller's assistant coach for over a decade, was essentially caught red-handed taking money. You have Mark Schlabaugh from ESPN.com reporting that Sean Miller and Christian Dawkins, a financial advisor, discussed a $100,000 payment to get DeAndre Ayton to commit to Arizona. Like, I mean, there's a ton of smoke here. And now you have a paid consultant for Adidas, this TJ Gasnola, saying under oath that he paid the family of DeAndre Ayton to go to Arizona.
And by the way, it should be said, nothing's going to happen because of this.
Yeah.
I would be just absolutely shocked.
And DeAndre Ayton, by the way, now with the Suns, doesn't represent Adidas. He's a Puma guy.
Which is amazing to me.
So there's just, this is bad for Arizona no matter how you look at it. And if the idea is that, well, we're just doing this to get to the bottom of how this all went down. No, you're not. You're doing this because I think the NCAA got themselves into a position where they thought they were too big to fail. And the FBI said, no, you're not. So let's go do a sting and an investigation. And now all of a sudden, you have testimony under oath in a courtroom in this NCAA fraud thing, this corruption trial.
Yeah.
Where you have a guy from Adidas saying, yeah, Arizona, North Carolina State, Kansas, you know. Yeah. And then you have Brian Bowen's dad testifying last week that he got multiple payments from different schools, including Arizona, making an offer of $50,000, and Oklahoma State proposing $150,000, an additional $8,000 to put towards a car and some, quote, undisclosed amount to buy a house.
I just don't understand. The next time something, the next time something comes up in the NCAA athletics, whether I don't care if it's a money sport or not, the next time something comes up, how are we supposed to say, nah, nothing happened here? This is college athletics we're talking about. Let's not. Who are we kidding here? This is a corrupt organization, and I agree with you. The NCAA thinks they're bigger than life, and they're really not.
Does Arizona get penalized here?
No, I don't think they will.
Really?
I don't think they will. I mean, what are they going to do? Okay, they're going to slap them on the wrist. Okay.
They should take scholarships away, and they should have to vacate
wins.
They
should crush that program.
Yes.
They should absolutely debilitate that program.
There is evidence that they paid a player to come and play at their university.
Yeah.
There is under oath testimony from a consultant at a major shoe brand that says, hey, DeAndre Ayton was paid money.
And just to stem off of this whole conversation that I feel like needs to be talked about when all of this is handled, why aren't players just able to be paid? Like, why do we have to be in this situation? At some point, let's revolutionize this whole thing and just get it over with.
Well, I think they're trying to do that, but it's awfully difficult to pay a guy and then say that he's there to get an education because they're not technically employees of the school. They're there as students, and they happen to be okay at basketball, so we're going to let them play basketball too. But that's just total BS.
Yeah.
You know, if you would allow a player to make money on his name, his likeness, his image, that settles the whole thing, in my opinion, or
yes,
a good part of it. Somebody's always going to be pissed about something or other.
Yeah.
But if you would just let a guy make money on jersey sales or allow him to put his face on a T-shirt and sell the T-shirt, why is that a problem?
Yeah.
You're not using the trademark. Let's use Arizona. You're not using the Arizona A.
Yeah.
You're using DeAndre Ayton's face to sell shoes. What's the problem with that? And if he's able to get Adidas to buy the T-shirts, why should that be a problem? He's a businessman. If you would allow these guys to sign autographs for money, why is that a problem? We're in 2018 where guys are doing things that you know about, they're not being reported, but you can't tell me that Sean Miller is innocent here.
He's not.
In my opinion, he's not. If he didn't know, he should be fired for incompetence. If he did know, he should be fired for breaking the rules.
Yeah, my opinion is odds are that this dude was spearheading it for the most part. I mean, he may not have known every single detail. That's my opinion, yeah. I mean, I think based on everything we've seen, this kind of testimony, I mean, there's...
The fact that his lead assistant for 10 years is, you know...
And if it had been a lead assistant of a year, okay, maybe I could question it. It's been a decade, bro.
You know what he's doing and how he's doing it.
You know, like it just doesn't surprise me anymore.
Yeah, I agree. Can we talk some professional basketball?
Yeah.
About guys who are paid and maybe shouldn't be? Quick update on Jimmy Butler. He's back at practice today. And this... I got to give kudos to ESPN for this because I don't know how they did this, but... Jimmy Butler goes to practice, yells at his general manager, Scott Layton, yells at him and says, you need me. You can't win without me. Goes after Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins on the floor, yelling at them. He says he kept it real. Like, he was a real pain in the ass at practice today.
Yeah.
He ran with the threes, the third string, and he beat the ones in scrimmages today. Jimmy Butler's team won the whole thing. Like, I mean, he dominated practice today. He apparently is in really good shape. He's healthy. He just went out there and whooped people's ass, got in their heads, yelled at everybody, was just a malcontent, but was playing really good basketball.
Yeah.
And then, oh, by the way, after practice, he sat down with Rachel Nichols from ESPN, who just happened to be in Minneapolis today.
Heard the weather's nice this time of year.
This is a stroke of brilliance out of her and ESPN.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you. I don't know how they pulled this off, but you're right. It's almost magical. Like, you clearly had him go to practice, light everybody up, dominate in practice.
Well, no. ESPN didn't have Jimmy Butler do anything.
It's awful.
Jimmy Butler pulled the strings on this. Yeah. Jimmy Butler said, okay, if I got a report and they can't or won't trade me, here's how I'm going to do it. And he clearly set up with ESPN, hey, why don't you send Rachel to Minneapolis on, you know, Wednesday the 10th. I'm going to go to practice, and I'll sit down afterwards. My guess is she had no idea what was going to happen at practice, that ESPN was just told, hey, if Rachel's there on Wednesday the 10th, Jimmy will sit down. He goes to practice knowing he's going to talk to ESPN, lights everybody up, dominates in practice, and then, oh, yeah, I got to go do this sit-down with ESPN. A, is this not just like Odell Beckham Jr. this week, who sat down with ESPN and freaked out everybody in his locker room? So ESPN, everybody's ripping ESPN over the last week. This is, having been a producer who had to book guests for a network TV show, this is the stuff of legends. Like, if you're able to pull Jimmy Butler today, how is that a bad thing?
It's not.
How, if you're able to pull Odell Beckham Jr. last Tuesday, they taped an interview with him on his day off. How is that a bad thing?
Yeah.
Like, stop blaming ESPN. Start blaming Jimmy Butler for being a malcontent and a terrible teammate.
Yeah, ESPN just taking advantage. I mean, I think when it comes to Jimmy Butler, the guy has something to prove clearly now. And anytime you tell an NBA player and a guy who's capable of dominating a game, hey, you got to go out and prove this because everybody doubts you, including me. I mean, it's dangerous. I mean, the guy's going to go out and do things.
He's not a superstar. This is the other thing that I'm just tired of hearing. I'm a Bulls fan. Like, I grew up idolizing Michael Jordan. Like, in my house in Phoenix, I have the Gatorade poster standout of Be Like Mike. Like, I'm a huge Michael Jordan fan, a huge Chicago Bulls fan. I was not a big Jimmy Butler fan at all. Like, the stories in when I was in Utah, like him and Jordan Leslie are, you know, family, and that was a cool storyline. And Jimmy Butler was cool for a while, and then, you know, Dwayne Wade shows up and everybody's unhappy. And Dwayne Wade's never been a malcontent or a problem. Well, then Tibbs gets fired, and you know, it's Hoiberg, but something's wrong. The whole time Hoiberg's there. So was it Tibbs or was it Jimmy Butler that was a problem? Was it Jimmy Butler or was it Dwayne Wade? Okay, well, now we got to, you know, Jimmy's going to Minnesota. Okay, well, it's Tibbs. We're putting the band back together.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Karl Anthony Towns isn't good enough, and Andrew Wiggins is soft, and now I want to be traded, and I'm going to tell you in August. It's like, dude, what are we doing?
Yeah.
This guy's not a superstar. They offered him 4 years and $110 million. Take your shoes off and count. That's $27.5 million a year. He turned it down. You play 65 games a year. I don't believe that Jimmy Butler is he a top 20 NBA player? Think your way through that. Like, is Jimmy Butler, who are the other top tier guys in the league? Is Jimmy Butler CJ McCollum?
Probably not now.
Ever? Has he ever been CJ?
Yeah.
I totally disagree with that. Like, what do you base that on?
Jimmy's defense, I think, is a total player. Defensively, he's excellent. He's one of the best in the league. For a while, we were talking about him and him being right there with Kawhi. I think Kawhi's better now at this point, but there was a time when he was that guy. And I don't think McCollum is a slouch defensively, but there's a difference. I think now McCollum is a juggernaut. There's no doubt.
I think CJ McCollum is an elite player. I think, you know, if you look at just the top 20 scoring guys, are you telling me that, you know, what, Bradley Beal? Are you more Bradley Beal or are you more Jimmy Butler?
Bradley Beal.
Are you more Joel Embiid or Jimmy Butler? Joel Embiid, massive contract with Under Armour today.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid? I'm taking Joel Embiid. I'm taking, here's one, DeMar DeRozan, Jimmy Butler.
Probably DeMar.
Their numbers are strikingly similar.
The problem is I worry after DeMar's performance this year, that has me worried, and that knocks him down a few runs.
But what has Jimmy Butler done? What is it that Jimmy Butler's done where you're like, oh, yeah, Jimmy Butler's...
He showed up. He didn't... I mean, he lost, but he showed up. DeMar was a nobody.
As opposed to what? Like, and again, I'm not trying to be a complete dick about this, but explain to me, where is it that Jimmy Butler all of a sudden is this guy leading the charge? Like, Jimmy Butler is a nice player, 37 minutes a game. Oh, that's right. Out of 82, he only played 59 games last year. He always misses huge chunks of game. Over his career, he only averages 65 games a year, 64.67 games a year. Over his career, Jimmy Butler. You have DeMar DeRozan that played 80 games last year. You have DeMar DeRozan that, in my opinion, yeah, you're right, didn't have a great year, but they both shot around 30, mid-30s from three. Yeah. Like, their numbers, to me, I'll take DeMar DeRozan. Because, and granted, he failed, but DeMar DeRozan is not a bad teammate.
Right.
You know, like, I look at, like, Victor Oladipo. Victor Oladipo is a better player. LaMarcus Aldridge, I'll take Jimmy Butler over LaMarcus Aldridge. Kyrie Irving, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, Giannis, Dame, LeBron, AD, James Harden. Like, those guys are elite. So then the question becomes Andrew Wiggins or Jimmy Butler? Okay, well, I'll take Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Karl Anthony Towns or Jimmy Butler? Well, I'll take Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah.
Right? I don't even think he's the best player on his team. Donovan Mitchell or Jimmy Butler?
Well.
Every day I'll take Donovan Mitchell. Every day. Every single day. Do you disagree with that?
I think we just need to be careful who we're comparing him to. We need to be comparing him to the shooting forwards in the league. So that would be Klay Thompson's a good example. I would say Klay Thompson over Jimmy Butler all day. Great example. I would say that's almost the best example because they're both really good defensively. They're both offensive players.
Like, Eric Gordon.
Who?
Eric Gordon.
Mm.
37% three-point shooter. Jimmy, I think, shoots 34.
Yeah, but Eric Gordon's not a good defender, I don't think.
True. Very true.
It depends what you want. I think that's close.
I think it is close. I think Jimmy Butler is not a top 20 player. I think he's just outside of the top 20 in the NBA. When it comes to total package, score, like John Wall or Jimmy Butler?
John Wall.
I think it's close, but I'm taking John Wall.
John Wall is a savage defensively.
Yeah, I'm taking John Wall.
He wants to get after you.
And he plays. Now, granted, he was hurt last year.
But he's been pretty reliable.
You know the other guy that's a really good question between him and Jimmy Butler? Chris Middleton. That's a guy that
nobody knows, bro.
Nobody talks about. But he's an elite player. And he's just outside the top 20 in my opinion. Like, he's like a 25th best player in the league. I think Jimmy Butler's a step above him. Like 21, 22, 23, if that's Jimmy. I think Chris Middleton's right there.
Yeah.
You got to play, and you got to be a good teammate. You got to make the guys around you better. And I don't think he is.
Yeah.
Kyle Kuzma? What about Kyle Kuzma? Brandon Ingram.
Not quite.
Kevin Love. I'll take Kevin Love. Which is interesting. The Cavs signed him in that massive extension.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a number one option for them. No, I don't like that at all. Right? Like,
well, he hasn't been a number one option since Minnesota, and I think that's not his fault.
And he played the block in Minnesota.
Yeah.
He was a spot-up three-point shooter with LeBron. So I think we'll see what Kevin Love is. He's lost some weight. He's really worked on his shot. Can he get to the basket? Can he go back to being that rebounding machine? I don't know. I'll take Kevin Love over Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
You disagree? And that's okay.
The hard thing for me is the locker room antics with Butler. That's the really tough part for me when because it's not... Like, the DeMar comparison's a really good one. The Klay Thompson one, for me, is the best one we've named so far. I just feel like, really, at the end of the day, Klay Thompson is a more dynamic player because of his shooting ability.
Sure.
The defense is very close for me. I mean, Klay Thompson can guard anybody in the league.
So what would you call him, like, a shooting guard then, or...
Klay Thompson?
Yeah. No, Jimmy Butler.
Jimmy's a small forward, in my opinion. I
so,
think
like,
he's
a three?
He's a three.
Okay.
For sure. He's
if
a three.
If you look at just small forwards...
Yeah.
He's certainly not Bron, KD, Paul George, Towns.
Paul George is a great example. They're, like, player, not going off stats, but if you look at player build, they're the same guy.
Oh, Paul
right?
George is,
like,
I just think
like
Paul
build
George
wise,
is so elite.
Paul George is a better player.
Yeah.
But, like, build-wise and what they bring to the table is about the same. Paul George just does it at another level.
Man, I'm looking at some of Chris Middleton's splits. I think Chris is a better player. Just in statistics. Now, Jimmy Butler, and I guess this is where we can leave this. Jimmy Butler's just not a killer. Jimmy
He's
Butler,
clutch, dude. He's hit a lot of shots.
Well.
But look, Jimmy Butler's never been in a position to go out and win, like, a huge game. He's never been in LeBron's position against Golden State where he's got to hit that fadeaway three as a Miami Heat.
Well,
like,
he's been in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I just don't think he's ever, I don't know, he's just never been, he's never been number one.
Man,
you know what I mean? He's never been
the
number
the
one
point,
option.
Because he's not a number one.
Yeah.
He personality-wise, he's not a number one. And I just am, I'm so tired of hearing it. Like, the guy, points per game in the postseason are 15.8. You're not a superstar, man.
No.
You're not. Like, you're
superstars
you're
are putting up 30.
You can't lose 8 points from your average. You know, you can't play 34 minutes a game in the postseason.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have just lost so, and maybe this is the way to say it. I've lost so much respect for Jimmy Butler.
Oh, I'm with you. Like, for sure, I'm with you.
And it's so disappointing because I actually really liked him.
I liked him as a Bull. I've hated him as a T-Wolf, and I love. A guy that's kind of gone on the same journey Jimmy Butler has is Derrick Rose. And I think Derrick Rose has a huge respect from people because he could have quit. And I think there's a lot of people that acknowledge that. Like the whole saga when he was a Nick and him just disappearing and then coming back. Like there's just been so many weird things that have happened with Derrick Rose. And it started with the injuries. And now he's here again. And now he looks really good. And the question is, can he stay healthy? And if he can stay healthy, can Jimmy Butler stay healthy? Can Derrick Rose stay healthy? They're going to be good for them.
Let me put it this way. If you're asking if a guy can stay healthy,
he's not healthy.
You probably know the answer.
Yeah.
You know,
can Gordon Hayward stay healthy this year?
Well, but see now, Gordon. By the way, if you haven't been watching the
he looks good.
The videos that they put out on The Athletic and the Players Tribune, I think it was.
Yeah.
Oh man, his road to recovery has been hellacious. It has been gnarled, dude. He talked about the depression he had, like not playing. It was really hard for him to watch the games on TV. Like watching his team win, he said it hurt him to watch his team win without him. I can't imagine being in that position. 6 minutes into the season, you have a horrific injury. And then you have a huge setback. I think you're right. Let's talk LeBron and Lonzo. Lakers should be tipping off as we're Wednesday night here at 7:30 Pacific time. They should be tipping off any minute. What do you expect out of Lonzo this year? Just give me 30 seconds on your expectations.
I think Lonzo Ball is going to impress defensively, mainly because he's put on the muscle and the weight. I think now he can really battle guys. Patrick Beverley is not out-muscling Lonzo Ball anymore. That's just not going to happen. I think offensively, for me, I don't think he's going to be asked to shoot a lot. I think he's going to fill that same role offensively when he's on the floor. He's going to ignite the offense. They're going to get up and down as they have in the preseason. And I think when he's open, because frankly he's going to be open a lot, he's got to make that shot.
Yes.
He's got to be able to knock that shot down. And that's the question. And if he can't knock it down, I hate to say this, Josh Hart will And Josh Hart has the same ability that Lonzo has. Now, defensively, I don't know. Lonzo likes to get after it. And this is what I was saying about Paul George. Paul George loves to get after you defensively. Like, I just feel like if Lonzo can play good defense and can make all the hustle plays and be the same guy he was last year but add 20 pounds or whatever it is, he's going to be good, dude. He'll be fine.
But what is your confidence level when you say that? Because you're not – we've had epic debates on this. You are not a Lonzo guy.
No, I don't have any confidence that his – based on the videos we've seen, that his jump shot is significantly better. I think he's had all this time to lift weights and recover and all this stuff, and I just think at the same time he hasn't had enough time to work on the shot. Until his shot is fixed, until he's getting closer to what Klay Thompson looks like rather than what Lonzo Ball looks like, I won't have that confidence in his shot.
But – I also, the tape that's come out of practice, he's making scrimmage threes. In scrimmages, he's making them. And that he's starting, they're going to run Ball, Kentavious Pope, and LeBron James. They're going to score a ton of points. And my thought on Lonzo is, I'm really excited to hear that he's put on 15 pounds of weight. All muscle, lean muscle, that he's benching 250 at 205. He's benching 250 pounds at 205 for a point guard in the NBA. And he's not all big and bulky, and he doesn't look like he's going to be a linebacker. He looks like he's a thoroughbred, like he's ready to run. I'm really excited about it because when the Lakers are good, to steal your line, it's better for the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, so I think LeBron is going to make him better.
Oh, certainly. And there's people out there who will tell you that LeBron James does not make superstars around him better, doesn't make guys around him that much better, and I just completely disagree. I think LeBron James makes everybody around him better, and it's well documented that LeBron James' ex-teammates miss him. Kyrie might be exempt from that, but everybody else you look at misses him.
Well, Kevin Love talked about that.
Yeah.
You know, that his game's got to change now and that he was able to take things for granted because LeBron was there.
Yeah.
LeBron draws so many triple teams and so many defenses sag on him that you have to make the three ball. Kyle Kuzma's corner three is going to be lethal. Kentavious Pope is going to be lethal because he can really shoot. Josh Hart. The biggest thing that Josh Hart and Lonzo have to do, they only have to do two things. Catch the basketball.
Yeah.
And be able to make the three. Because if you can make the three, you're going to be in a layup line. Because they'll run at you so hard. I just think their top end, if Lonzo is truly in this kind of shape, where he is lean and strong, good Lord, their top end goes way up. Because if he's 205, his legs are much stronger. So if he's 205, what does that do to their top end win total? Like, what's best case scenario in your mind?
I think best case scenario is probably like low 50s, 51, 52. I think that would be like top of the mountain. That would mean, again, it should be said, that would mean that they're a really good defensive squad. They might not be the best defensive team in the league or anything like that, but they can shut you down.
I think they're going to be top 10 defense.
Yeah.
Because in this league, what do you have to do to defend well? You have to guard the line. And they have really agile, quick defenders. Lonzo's always been very good at guarding the three-point shot.
Well, and he likes to play defense, which is important.
And he's a great rebounder.
Yeah.
Josh Hart is a tenacious defender. Kuzma's a good defender, not a great defender. But Brandon Ingram has really good instincts. Like, all their guys, and if you look at Lance, if you look at Rondo, those guys are really good defenders. JaVale is so mercurial and such an enigma that I don't know that anybody has any idea what he'll do defensively. But I think it's so situational. It's a Rudy Gobert conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Rudy, like, JaVale's not going to be in the game the last 10 minutes. Rudy probably isn't going to be in the game the last 5 minutes. So who knows what that will look like defensively. So I think the best case scenario, if you're the LA Lakers and I said to you today you're going to win 50 games and you're going to finish fourth in the West, I think you'd be jumping up and down and just begging for, you know, May to get here.
Yeah, it'd be a hell of a year. And you still have more talent to add this next coming offseason. And I think, you know, I just think a LeBron James team is always going to shoot a lot of threes. But I think we have to be careful not to get too high on this team and also not to get too low on this team through the first 20 games, because there will be a lot of mistakes by this team in the first 20-ish games.
Well, there's a learning curve.
Yeah.
Because what are we, a week away from tip-off for the regular season, and Lonzo and LeBron are just now playing together?
Yeah.
And you're looking at them going against Golden State, who's elite. I mean, if you...
And has the chemistry.
If you look at Draymond Green, I think his field goal percentage against when he's the closest defender to the ball is like in the middle 30s. Clay is, I think his career highs. I was looking at, I'm a nerd. A friend of mine told me he looked at it today. That's a lie, I did. It's like 32% is his career high for when he's the nearest defender to the ball. That guy shoots 32%. That's unbelievable how good defensively Klay Thompson and Draymond Green are.
Mm-hmm.
Lonzo's never going to be that guy because those guys are elite. But, boy, he doesn't have to be. He just has to be good enough. And they have to rebound. Second chance opportunities, forget it. Because I'm telling you, the Lakers are going to be a track team. They're going to be up and down.
Yeah, I mean, they are. But again, fourth in the West this year is good. Next year, that's not going to be good enough.
Well, you're also going to have another max contract.
I know you
contract.
Are going to add another max contract, but what I'm saying
is... I think
they
have $59 million on the cap
What
next
I'm
year.
Saying is this year's just a warm-up year for them. This year's just about bringing this team together and figuring out who you're going to cut for next year.
Well, see, I actually think there's a little more to it than that. I think the LA Lakers are a team that will evaluate at the new year. Let's see what they do for October, November, and December. Let's see who they are, who gets hurt, who stays healthy. Have you won at the midway point? Have you won 25 games? Are you on pace to win 50 games? Can you see a point where, hey, what is Houston like? So Houston's not winning 65 games the way they're currently constituted. Now, if they go trade for Jimmy Butler and he's a second or third option on that team, okay, now they're probably going to get close to 60 wins again. But if they don't, well, what's that do to the Lakers' projection? Let's say they're at the trade deadline and they've won 35 games. And they're like, well, you know, we could be really good if we traded for this guy. Is that guy Jimmy Butler? I don't know. Do you want Jimmy Butler on the Lakers? He says he wants to be a Clipper, not a Laker. You know, like there's all this weird stuff. So I think the Lakers are going to be a work in progress this year as far as the roster. Because I could see them making a deal at the trade deadline where it's like, yeah, you know what? We've won 40 games at the trade deadline. But we're not as good as Golden State. Somehow the Spurs have won 80 games at the trade deadline, which obviously I'm being a jerk, but you get my point.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they're not where they want to be, or instead of pushing a top four, they're pushing to be seventh or eighth.
Because
we know how close the West is.
Oh, yeah.
I could see them making a big deal. I could see Pelinka using some of his cap space because, like I said, I think they only have $59-60 million bucks on the books for next year. So I could see them doing that. One of the other things, though, is it a slam dunk that Golden State's the best team in the West? Is that a given?
Yeah.
You think it's a given?
I don't think it's, I don't, in my opinion, it's not that close. I think now that you have Boogie Cousins, I don't know where's the weakness. Because he can shoot the ball, he can defend, he'll rebound. And by the way, he's playing with something to prove because he didn't get offered anything.
Well... You know, I think that's great that he, if he has a bad attitude about things, I think that's great. If that's how you're going to go at him, okay. If he's motivated.
How are you not motivated?
I don't know. I think you're right. I think there's no reason for him not to play for his life because he's on a one-year deal and he's a guy that's going to want a max contract. But there's also some people who say that New Orleans is a much better team without him.
I'm sure they are, but that doesn't make them anything. That doesn't make them better than the Warriors. I don't know that the Pelicans are better than the Lakers will be at that time of year when we're talking about that.
Well, if AD's on the Lakers a year from now,
well, that would changes be things.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, let's switch gears and get to baseball. Let's talk about the championship series first, because obviously the American League is fascinating. First of all, should Aaron Boone be fired?
No.
I don't think so either. Yankee fans, which you are, Yankee fans were really critical, obviously, of that game 3, where he just freaking melted down.
He made a rookie mistake.
Yeah.
Made an absolute rookie mistake.
The Lance Lynn thing, sending Severino back out for, the fourth or whatever. Like, yeah, he clearly made some tactical mistakes there.
The essence of the problem is that you've got the best bullpen in baseball, in my opinion. Just a loaded bullpen. You're playing for your life. And you send Severino back out. Use your damn bullpen, bro. Use it.
By the way, I would love to see Dave Robertson in a Cub uniform next year.
I mean
David Robertson,
the ageless wonder.
Man, he was so good.
But the point is that you've got this awesome bullpen. Go out and use it. If Zach Britton goes out there and gets lit by the Red Sox, well, Aaron, there's nothing else you could have done, bro.
Yeah, we can't send Severino back out there, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you send Britton out there. All right, great. That's the right move. Okay, yep. Let's say Britton comes in, shuts it down. All right, well, let's bring in a starter from the bullpen. Lance Lynn, here's a clean inning. Show me what you got.
Yeah, that was the, yeah.
Like, why
yeah.
would you bring a guy who's a starter into a game with a dirty inning?
But he's a rookie manager. Let's stop talking about firing.
Yeah,
Aaron. That's just to
this
me.
Isn't
that's
Joe
a little
Girardi
short-sighted.
Anymore, bro.
Yeah.
This isn't some experienced guy. He's going to make these mistakes. And by the way, I am still of the opinion they would not have won that series. They were behind and chasing it with the pitching the whole time.
By the way, Rajon Rondo started tonight for the Lakers. I don't know if that matters. I don't know why, but whatever. I'm just a point of emphasis. Anyway, speaking of the series, Houston at Boston, Verlander and Sale in game one, Cole and Price in game two.
So are we going to be 2-0 or are we going to be 1-1?
I think you're going to be 2-0. I mean, Verlander in a big game is...
In the postseason, Verlander just finds a way to be dialed in.
Yeah, and the way Cole is pitched for them... I mean, no offense to Chris Sale or Price. They've both had failings in the postseason. Now, Chris Sale last night was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Against a downtrodden Yankee team. I think you could be 1-1, but you're not going to win the Cole-Price matchup. They say that they fixed the issues with David Price, and I'm like, bro, dude, come on. Are you serious?
I'm sorry. Let's be clear. So you're saying that you fixed... several postseason, I don't even know what the number is at this point, but he's had so many opportunities to prove us wrong, and he just hasn't done it.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but some guys are just not, they're just not able. You know how this is. As a guy that pitched in a major college program, you know how this is. Big games are...
You either have it or you don't.
You're that guy or you're not. You either want the rock or you don't. And he doesn't shy away from it, but let's just be honest. He's not a guy that you want to hand the baseball to in game two. It's at home. It is at home, and that, to me, makes a big difference. But this is a guy that won you 16 games.
He's a dominant regular season pitcher. Not in the postseason. He's just not.
Two and nine with a 6.03 ERA career.
2-9. Help me.
With a 6.03 ERA.
Help me. I would even say that the Verlander Chris Sale matchup is even. Obviously Verlander has had a storied postseason career at this point. The performance against the A's and back in, it's just ridiculous. Chris Sale has an opportunity to do well. The problem is that the Astros guys are going to get you, and then Bregman's going to come through and just put you just. Sink it through your heart.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. It is really interesting the dynamics of one's mind and how you function when you're in the postseason. And I don't know what's wrong with him, but I'm telling you that series is going to be amazing. There's a chance Boston wins both those games. But the way that you Houston hit, the way that without Altuve... most of the year or a good chunk of it. They're still an elite team.
Bro.
Like how do you can't expect Boston to win that series. I don't anyway, even though if it was me, I'd have started Porcello in game two.
Yeah.
He would have been on full rest. I would start Porcello in game
good.
Two, man. And again, not to say I told you so, but this is a guy we argued about earlier in the year. And he put on those Boston colors.
Yeah, he looks good, man.
And something changed. Yeah. I don't know what it was. But here and there, we'll see. Dodgers at Brewers. Kershaw versus, I think, Milwaukee's best pitcher. I don't know if you've ever heard of To Be Determined. He's got a nasty slider.
He's got a hell of an ERA, bro.
But the full rotations for those series have not been announced. But we know that Kershaw's going to get the rock in game one. Were you surprised that he did not start game one? Of the previous series. I was kind of surprised by that.
I don't know. I mean, it wasn't. They should have won that series. I mean, that was the expectation. So I just feel like, no, I wasn't really surprised. I mean, I think Walker Buehler's been awesome. I think he's given them what they needed.
He wasn't awesome. And by the way, then Kershaw comes out and just destroys them, which Atlanta, which I thought was hysterical. But,
and by the way, real quick, Manny Machado has been worth every penny. The absolute pimp job that he pulled off, it was amazing. I mean,
professional,
huge, awesome dude.
Professional hitter. A professional hitter. And his ability to take pitches that are inches off the plate, his ability to inflict his will on the umpire, that's a ball and it's a ball because I didn't swing at it.
It's savage, bro. It's awesome.
And it forces you to then, as a pitcher, throw that ball on the black and he's going to rake. And then you start looking at guys like Justin Turner, who committed an egregious error, by the way. But you start looking up and down that lineup and you're like, man, they're tough to beat. I would not want to play the Dodgers in the World Series because I feel like they can compete. Their offense can compete with any of the pitching staffs, any of the starters, but Houston's staff.
Bro, let's not make the same mistake we've made every single year. It's the Dodgers in the World Series. I'll take the Astros. I'll take the Astros. Now I know, Dodger fans, that you're feeling a little better this year because Darvish isn't tipping his pitches and throwing batting practice, but I still think the Astros.
Why do you have to bring his name up? Why do you have to bring his name up? Why? Jerk. Go Cubs. Anyway, I agree with you. Fat Yu Darvish is not tipping his pitches.
Mm-hmm.
So, he said he was fat, he was overweight, and he was tipping his pitches, and then his brain melted.
Him and Severino should hang out.
Yeah, he's a 3-year-old. Anyway, I like Dodgers and Astros. I'd love to see Dodgers and Red Sox. I would love to see that
series. Be great for baseball.
Oh, man. I would love to see that series. Before we exit stage left today, you made a really awful comment to me that I'm hurt before the show. You questioned the greatness of Chris Bryant. And I just, you know, beyond the physical pain that I wanted to inflict on you, I just don't understand that. The story came out today. Two things. The story came out today that the Arizona Diamondbacks are looking to trade Zach Greinke and his awful contract and Paul Goldschmidt, America's first baseman. And Jake sends me a text today. Oh, Cubs going after Goldie? Yeah. No, Dick. They're not.
They don't hit. They have an awful approach.
That's true.
Oh, Goldie's for sale?
That's true. Oh, but they have a little guy named.
Let's find a way to use him.
They have a little guy named Anthony Rizzo, who's younger and just as good as Paul Goldschmidt. So I'll take Rizzo over Goldschmidt, and never mind that's Anthony Rizzo's team. They're not going to go after Goldschmidt. I think there could be a conversation about Zach Greinke. I don't love that because I think he's owed $15 billion for the next 8 years. It's only like 2 years or something like that. But the point is, he's owed a ton of money, and I would rather have a big bat, Bryce Harper, than Zach Greinke.
Well,
I would.
Listen, I mean, the argument you're about to make, I mean, it makes it sound like you're going to have two big bats in the lineup this year or next year or whenever they figure out how they're going to sign Chris Bryant. So, you know, go ahead and make your argument, and then I'll blow it up.
Chris Bryant, an MVP winner already, and a guy that is under club control for 3 more years, was supposedly, according to David Kaplan in Chicago, Cap says he was offered a $200 million contract and turned it down.
Allegedly.
Offered $200 million and turned it down. And people in Chicago lost their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And I simply say, if you're Chris Bryant and you're in a season, because it was supposedly during this past season, you're in a season where you have a significant shoulder injury that took all of your power away from you, put you on the DL for months at a time. You had a terrible year this year. Why would you sign any contract in that year when you know the club has 3 years of control? Why would you allow them to buy your arbitration years? He's going to make $12 million in arbitration, at least $12 million in arbitration. So it's not like he's going to be underpaid.
What, $700,000 or $12 million? I mean, it's close, right?
Well, he's going to get a significant raise, as will Javi Baez out of arbitration. But my point is, if you're Chris Bryant, you want to go to free agency. You want where Bryce Harper's at, where you're going to get a $300 million deal. Because if it's not Chicago, it will be somebody. Because Chris Bryant's going to hit you 35 to 40 home runs. He's got upside potential of 100 to 120 RBIs. He's a guy that can be your best player. In fact, he's a guy that can be the best player in baseball. He is on the Trout, Harper, Chris Bryant level. But he's not healthy this year. So if you're Chris Bryant, does it seem like the right thing to do to sign a contract extension now? I don't think it is. I think $200 million is at least $100 million short.
Yeah, I'm never going to pay Chris Bryant $300 million. It's just not going to happen. I could see $250. $300 is just simply not going to happen.
But think about where the economics of baseball are, right? Because that's what we're talking about. I'm not talking about paying Chris Bryant $300 million because you want to keep him. I'm telling you that that's where the economics of baseball are and will be in 3 years from now. He will likely be more than that. When you look at guys, the highest paid players in baseball are all pitchers. And as you would expect, right? Like you would think that Clayton Kershaw is making $35.5 million earned. Mike Trout is making $34 million. He's earned that. Zach Greinke's making $34 million. Nah, I think I'll take a pass. But you get my point. That guys like Albert Pujols, there's a guy that's overpaid, but when did he get paid? Years ago, he's making $30 million. So you go up and down this list. Is he worth Jason Hayward money? Because Jason Hayward got a $200 million contract. Chris is worth way more than Jason Hayward.
Yep.
When he signed the contract, it was worth more than Jason Hayward. He got an 8-year, $184 million contract. Chris Bryant's worth $100 million more than Jason Hayward. That's just, he's a gold glover in four corner positions. First, third, right, and left. No matter where you put him, he's a really good defender. And he's probably, and it depends on who's playing third, because Machado's probably a better offensive player than Chris is. But he's, I could argue he's the best hitting third baseman in baseball.
Bryant or Arenado?
Chris Bryant. Arenado does not have positional flexibility. Arenado is a third baseman. That's it. You know, so for me, I'm taking Chris Bryant. In 20.
Avi Baez or Chris Bryant?
Chris Bryant. Absolutely. Better hitter.
Okay.
I think. He's already won an MVP. They're the same caliber of defender. Javi's just a middle infielder, so he gets to use his athleticism.
Well, he's not just a middle infielder. I mean, he's played all three.
Well, he's a shortstop. Javier Baez's best, highest use position is shortstop. No doubt about that in my mind. With his build and his ability, I call him a shortstop. He's played a lot of second base because you had Addison Russell there, and who knows if Addison's ever on the team again. I have no idea. My guess is he's done as a Chicago Cub. But I take Chris Bryant over Javi Baez. All-around player, I'll take KB for sure.
Yeah, I guess you just value him a hell of a lot more than I do. I mean, he's won an MVP. That's great.
What
he
don't didn't even you hit, like about him?
He didn't hit 300 in his MVP year. He hit 294.
Oh, excuse me.
Well, it's a big difference. You're saying he's capable of 310, 315?
I think he is.
I don't know that he is capable of 310 or 315 because I don't think most players nowadays are going to hit that.
Do you realize how young this guy is? Do you realize,
yeah,
experience-wise? How young this guy is? Like, it's not like he's been in the league 5, 10
years.
Yeah,
but he also played a ton of college baseball, right? Like, so yeah. He's played a lot of baseball in his life. Like, I don't, like, you really think he's got all this progression to go. You think he's, like, I just don't see it. He's won a World Series. He's done all this stuff already. Like, what else does he need to do?
He hasn't even had 3,000 at-bats yet. He hasn't even, I mean, he's played less than 1,000. He's played 560 games. I mean, this guy, his plate discipline will get better. His ability to drive the ball, oppo, will get better. This is a guy who I think his strikeout numbers will come down. You know, he can't strike out 100 times a season. Those numbers will come down. If he strikes out, if he puts a ball in play, let's say he strikes out 80 times, and let's just surmise that KB puts a ball in play 20 more times a year. I mean, that's a lot of more hits. That's probably, let's say he gets, you know, 10 more hits out of those 20 times he doesn't strike out. That's a lot of hits. That's the difference between 300 and 294. That's the difference between, and let's say half those go out of the yard, five more home runs a year. I mean, that's slugging percentage, on base percentage. Like all of your big money metrics go up. You know, like this is a guy that when he plays, he scores 100 runs a year. Like you can't knock him offensively. What you have to do is project out. He's going to strike out less, which means he'll get on base more. I mean, he's going to, I'm telling you, it'll go up. It'll go up. This will be a guy that will get on base 400%. He'll have a 400 on base percentage, yeah. I think. Because his career on base percentage is like 385. You know, so I think his on base percentage goes up. That's just me. Before we get out of here,
mm-hmm.
Have any fun events you do this week at all? Or, you know, like you do anything fun?
Well, yeah, we went and saw Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah.
But you mentioned that.
How was your first Foo Fighters experience?
Oh, it was fun. It was a ton of fun. I mean, the show they put on is just ridiculous.
Now, this is your first major rock concert.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a great time. I mean, they lived up to it for sure.
I think it's one of the better performances I've seen. I think they were better when I saw them in Oakland. And I've seen a lot of rock concerts. Like when I was in high school, I saw Metallica a bunch, and like I've seen some really big shows. The Foo Fighters are one of the best live bands ever. One of the better concerts I've been to, and as an adult, I've kind of grown out of concert going, unfortunately. But my wife and I went to Green Day and Jimmy Eat World in Sacramento. That was an outrageous show. That was really good. But those are two of my favorite bands.
Yeah, some of the best bands ever, bro.
But Foo Fighters is great. I think having seen Audioslave twice, I think I've seen them. Their shows are outstanding. When Chris was still alive, by the way. Amazing. Like, I've seen a lot of great bands. I think Foo Fighters is probably my favorite live show that I've seen.
Yeah, it's just, I can't say enough positive things about it. Dave does a great job.
Yeah. I'm hoping that my wife hooks me up with, and this is going to sound crazy, Fleetwood Mac tickets. Fleetwood Mac. They're on tour. I got to see Fleetwood Mac. I have to be in the same vicinity as Stevie Nicks just one more time in her full adult life.
Okay.
You're like, no. No, I'm good.
That's all you, bro. That's all you, man.
One of the more interesting parts about that concert was, is it the crowd at the Foo Fighters? It's all like...
Gen Xers.
Yeah, it's all like 35 to 45-year-old cougars running around.
Yep. Yep.
There were a lot of older folks there. Yep. You were definitely one of the younger bros there.
Yeah, man.
But it was a great show. Tomorrow, NFL top five, bottom five. And, of course, we'll talk a lot more Major League Baseball, college football. There's a ton to get to. That's why you turn to The Monty Show every single day. Follow me on Twitter, MONTY, The Monty Show. Get the show every day at TheMontyShow.com. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.